This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Dukes and Bell. Carl coming back from Vegas. He'll be back tomorrow, guys. Busy week. We're going to be at Twin Peaks in Buckhead on Thursday, Friday up to Kennesaw. So come on, join the party, pal, as we get ready for more action with seven teams in the Sweet 16. Wow, that's nearly 50%. I did the math. Chris is in for Carl today. We start every hour of the program with a big old, hey, man, show's flying today. If you missed it, we spoke earlier with Ian Valentino, NFL insider from the 33rd team, and we've been reading a lot of stuff from Albert Breer today, and we were asking him about this Kirk Cousins deal. Basically, in a nutshell, Albert Breer says, if Cousins wants to go to a team where there's not going to be a rookie or a guy in the pipeline overlooking, you know, over his shoulder, well, what team is that going to be?
I don't know.
And if he's going to try to control this and you know, have, as he does have in his contract, he's got a no trade clause. He's got to sign off on where he's going to go. Where else is he going to go, Chris, if the Browns don't get their quarterback? That would be the only landing spot, because if the Titans go Cam Ward, the Giants go Shador Sanders, then basically Cleveland's the only shot we got to get him out off the roster in a trade.
Yeah, we saw Jameis Winston get signed by the Giants. To me, as we've been saying all show long, that just doesn't fit to me, having two veteran guys like that on the same roster with Jameis waiting in the wings, essentially, for Kirko to do what he did in Atlanta and screw the whole thing up. I don't see that happening. Cleveland, we know about their cap issues, Mike. We know that that's why they haven't traded for him yet, because they don't have the money to pay him or even eat a decent portion of what he is owed this season. So really what it becomes, at least in my opinion, and that's what Ian talked about as well, you're going to have to wait for somebody to go down. You're going to have to wait for a highly competitive team like the Packers or the Lions or somebody that is knowing that they have a chance to make a deep playoff run to lose their quarterback either in training camp or before the trade deadline to say, we're going to try to then get that third or fourth round pick.
The Miami Hurricanes had their pro day today, and the Giants are there. Everybody's there. The Titans are there. The Browns are there. Anybody who's picking in the top 10 makes sense to be there. By the way, I don't know what this was apropos of. They were coming from somewhere. I was driving down. We did a little staycation. I was driving back down to the South Side on Saturday, and I saw the University of Miami football team 18-wheeler on the connector.
So random.
Yeah, I don't know where it was coming from, unless they're just rolling through town, just advertising. Either way, I joked around. I said, it looks like rolling probable cause to me.
That's a good line.
That's a Florida State joke. I did see them. But Cam Ward throwing, he did not throw it at the combine. Didn't have to. You know these guys, they want to throw the guys they're familiar with, albeit for one season, and he's throwing darts. He's got better arm strength than Shador Sanders. It's not a knock on Shador Sanders. That's just facting.
Yeah, and apparently their big-time receiver, Xavier Restrepo, ran like a 4.9.
Oof.
It was not good for him. But
have to love the plucky white Spanish guy to make that move with that speed.
Yeah. He did have a monster season, but apparently not exactly a trailblazing speed. Oof. But you know what? Drake London doesn't have trailblazing speed, and he's certainly made it work in the NFL as well. But back to the Cousins thing.
Right.
Mike, I really think what it's going to come down to, again, is a desperate team in desperate times saying, we are in a Super Bowl window and our quarterback goes down. Because at this point, it doesn't make sense for him to go to any of these teams at this point. Like, the window for that was a couple of weeks ago when the game of musical chairs was going on, and now the only one left without a chair really is the Browns.
And the thing that you and I and Carlo and I have been talking about is just how weird will the dynamic be in the locker room. If you heard the conversation last week, we had a former Falcon fullback, guy's guy, Ovi Mahaley, talking about, there'd be some elements in the locker room that'd be a little weirded out by the stuff that Kirk pulled. You guys remember, for those who don't, you've been living under a rock here in Atlanta, that, you know, Kirk says he's fine, he's not hurt, and then only to say at the Super Bowl, oh, no, I was banged up, to try to strong-arm the team and show that he's viable for another contract somewhere, if you're dumb enough to make the move for him. Or do you say, and it was funny because ironically this afternoon, while we're talking about Cousins, NFL Network reruns the game in Atlanta, the Thursday night football with the unbelievable comeback. We're dead in the water with a few minutes left, and then we go on and win in overtime. That's arguably one of the best Falcon games of all time with a guy who sets the season, the single game passing record, only to have the wheels come off subsequently just 4 weeks later.
The Kadarrell Hodge walk-off that earned him another year in Atlanta, Mike Bell, right. Essentially.
Crazy. But anywho, we're just laughing as we're watching that. It was, I know I joked around. Yes, I did start the game in section 342, and I finished it in section 142. Like a lot of people, we were heading for the exits, but we didn't leave the building. Thank you.
It's not your fault.
Hey, man, but where do you go with this? Okay, so let's just say we play it out. Carl's always maintained that they will keep him, hoping for that thing that you just mentioned Albert Breer was writing about. Injuries, team that doesn't get the traction whatever they were looking for, either in the marketplace or in the draft. So, yeah, you're not going to get anything for this draft. This draft is come and gone. It'll be a pick for 26. So then you have the prospect of him being here. So let me just throw it out there. I said this to Chris on Friday, said it earlier. There was a guy, Manny Ramirez, one of the best players of his generation for a number of years. But he's a nut. He's a fruit. He's just wackadoodle. I mean, he's just goofy. And the Red Sox, the phrase was, that's just Manny being Manny. Well, do you feel there's going to be guys in our locker room that say, look, We believed in Kirk up until the time we didn't. Maybe they still believe in Kirk, and that's just Kirk being Kirk. He's just a very, I don't know, just strange duck. He's very flippant. He likes to talk to everybody. He does run his mouth a little bit, and that's just Kirk being Kirk. And I've got no problem with him as a Falcon. Him being my teammate, him backing up Michael Penix, and there it is.
Let me ask you this, because I think they do. And that question.
And I still think they do too. But we've had two NFL players said they'd have an issue with it. But as we said, does that maybe still play in 2025, where everybody just cares about themselves and making their own money, and they don't give a crap about what that guy did or what he said?
Do you think that the Falcons upper brass has a drop dead price for Kirk Cousins? Meaning we're going to
17 million.
Yeah, we're going to accept a pick no lower than this and eating the contract no lower than that? Or do you think they're going to be willing to get rid of him at whatever a team is willing to offer? Because, Mike, I think they have a drop-dead price. And I do think, after hearing everything we've heard, that they are going to keep him if they don't get what they want. And that's just something that everybody on the team, I don't agree with it. I know you don't agree with it. But unfortunately, it seems like they're going to stick to their guns on this one. I do think the locker room matters. I do think Michael Penix not having a ghost over his shoulder at all times matters. Mm-hmm. I think that stuff is real. But the Falcons and other people have said they don't care about that.
So the Falcons moving on with Kirk Cousins. You know, guys, from a media standpoint, you know, D-Led's going to be all over it. We'll be all over it. Can we get to, if Bass is listening right now with the Falcons PR, do we get to talk to Kirk? Because I'd like to ask Kirk, when were you lying? Were you lying in November? Were you lying in January, February about your injury? And is that something that you feel is, have you espoused a role of leadership on this team? Is that how a leader handles his business?
No, but he's not the leader of the Falcons anymore. That's the thing.
Right, and that's a question of the coaching staff, and that's a question of, you know, the interactions that you, I mean, look, we used to be a very soft town. I think it's gotten better and better. I think Carl and I, like, I'm not trying to toot our own horn. We take credit for trying to ask tough questions and be, you know, dogged and stuff. D-Led does it. And there's a lot of guys now that are in that media room that do. And for many years, it was like a country club, just like it is covering baseball. Nobody asks any tough questions. They're getting better at it. But I do think this is legit because it is a controversy. We've talked about it all year because we're not making this up. This occurred. We were off to a 6-3 start. We're in the catbird seat for the division. This guy loses it.
In a way that's never been seen before. And everybody speculated. There was rampant speculation about what was going on. And ultimately, it was nothing, or so we were told. Right. He was on the injury report for one day. And then it came out, like you said, at the end of the season that this guy was hurt. So I always go back to, you know, if I'm Chris Lindstrom, if I'm Jake Matthews, mm-hmm. and I see this guy walk back into the locker room, I'm like, dude, you're what are you?
Right.
Man?
But as I said, I just, you know, we're coming at it from a certain perspective of like, that's below the line. That's not. And then also asking the owner of the team, hey, you got to trade me to a team where I can start. Okay, where? You know, if the Giants go Shador Sanders, as we said, if the Titans go with Cam Ward, then it really leaves the Browns. And the Browns may sign Russell Wilson, in which case, we got nothing. We're SOL. And then you just have to eat it and release it. Then there's the next $64,000 question. Let's just say that's the scenario. Then what do you do?
I don't think they're going to cut him, Mike.
Then you keep him. Then you have to roll with it, everything we just talked about.
And that, to me, is a scary proposition because – Mike, there's a lot of players on this team that are fighting for contracts. There's a lot of players on this team that look for new deals in the offseason. So you're going to tell me that, God forbid, the Falcons go on a 2 or 3 game losing streak and Penix is part of the problem, that they're not sitting there thinking to themselves, man, remember that game we just watched, Mike, on TV where Kirk did all that stuff?
Right.
Is he not better for us right now? I got a contract due at the end of the year. I got to play well.
Stay tuned for that one, guys. The other thing that came out today, I was joking around with Chris that I guess CBS Sports, one of their writers. What's the guy we have him on the show?
Oh, yeah, Jordan DeGianni.
So is he now an enemy of the Dukes and Bell program?
I don't know if I'm calling him anything.
He gave us a D-plus as far as our free agency. But as Chris said, you know, we have no money. There's only so much you can do. So I think the best we could have been is a C anyway. I like getting Leonard Floyd. He's a solid piece. He's an upgrade, albeit for 1 year. But what? How does that, I don't think that affects anything. I think you can still go edge if you feel you go direct. If you go directly to, I don't know, corner at the first pick, I still don't see that. I think it's tackle or edge rush.
For me right now, the secondary is done in terms of starters.
Because they got Mike Hughes. You know, I know that didn't really blow anybody's skirt up, but the numbers, statistically, he's in the top third, top 25% actually of corners in the league. So even though his D-Led likes to bring him, quarterbacks threw for 66% against him, but
right.
If you, depends on whose metric you're looking at. PFF grades are pretty high.
Here's the thing. Is Clark Phillips ever going to be a starter for you? Because this is the maker. This is it.
Like the guy?
Give him
a
shot.
Love his fighting spirit. You know, the old Utah versus USC, him and Drake. We talked so much about that 2 years ago. But at times he gets exposed with his size, like the final game of the season in New Orleans two years ago.
Put him in the nickel, see what he can do.
Hey, we'll talk more Falcons coming up in the sixth. This hour of the show is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, where B-Dubs is football. And some hoops, too, this time of year. We'll come back. You got 7 teams from the SEC in the big dance. Moving on to the Sweet 16. We got a hell of a tournament coming up here at State Farm. We'll get into all that. Hear what Calipari had to say. Hear what the UConn's coach had to say. You can't say that in front of the kids. It's all coming up.
77-75, and the Gators head to the Sweet 16.
A lot of folks feel they're the number one team for a reason. ESPN was touting it on their selection show just a week or two ago. So, yeah, the Gators, they get by Dan Hurley. We got any audio of Dan Hurley blubbering? It's Dukes and Bell with Chris in for Carl today. Carl, I hope we'll win some money on the tournament out there in Vegas. We'll find out tomorrow. But, yeah, Dan Hurley, he's already getting some heat because there was a young stringer working for a small website in North Carolina, and he had his phone running when Hurley comes in the tunnel and basically tells Baylor, I hope they don't blank you like they blanked us. I hope they don't blank the Bears like they blank the Huskies. But anyway, here's is this before or after he said all that nonsense. Take a listen.
You know, I was in a coach. I don't necessarily. I was in the hot seat going into 23. You got to ask Dave Benedict. But until these men, you know, until Alex Carabin put on the uniform, and, you know, and Samson, the players change your life when you. You have such special people.
Yeah, man, look, he's emotional there, but he's also acted like a real turd to a lot of people, and people take notice of that sort of stuff, Chris. I mean, you got to be magnanimous in victory and defeat. He doesn't either, but he has built an unbelievable thing up there at UConn. But a lot of folks were kind of taking a lot of delight in watching him go down to the Gators.
I don't blame the range of emotion. I blame the lack of control of said emotions. You can get really high and really low. It's expected when you're a coach coaching in March Madness and you're coming off of back-to-back national titles. But you need to act like a coach that's won back-to-back national titles. Yeah. For as much crap as we give Roy Williams and Coach K, and they had all their haters throughout their years, they were dignified men for the most,
well, actually, hold on. Time out. I've sat, anybody who sat behind, any Georgia Tech fan who sat behind the bench, Coach K got away with freaking murder. The stuff Chris, you've never heard cussing put together the way Coach K did. Honestly, I know where you're going with that. Because, you know, at least, you know, Coach K in the big picture had the discipline that his mentor Bobby Knight never had as things started to go south for him. But yeah, I can tell you, some of the stuff that K got away with, my God, that's what Paul Hughes used to say. Like, I know he's won some championships, but what the hell, man? And Gary Williams would say the same thing to you because he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But yeah, anyway, yeah, it was UConn finally getting knocked out and the Gators. And obviously, that wasn't as good a Husky team as Hurley has had. Arkansas, I thought that was a great win over St. John's. We've been talking about it today, how Patino kind of blew it. you know, benching R.J. Lewis and then, you know, just taking one of his best players and, I don't know, miscommunication or just not feeling that he could get it done and then arguing with reporters afterwards. We played that audio a few times. But St. John's, that goes my long shot. They're out. I don't think anybody had them beating Florida as it was. But now the question is, how many SEC teams are going to make it to the Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, you could potentially see a path for a couple. I mean, I think we could, what, pencil in Duke?
Right.
Pencil in Florida.
Well, the winner of Kentucky-Tennessee takes on the winner of Houston and Purdue. So if you can knock off the, you know, the physicality and the defense of Houston, if Kentucky or, you know, Rick Barnes, that'd be a hell of a, I mean, he's never, you know, his rep, he just can never win the big one. Then on the other side of the bracket, Alabama will certainly be the favorite to beat BYU, and then you got to match up with Duke, sure, provided they beat Arizona. Here in Atlanta, Auburn and Michigan, Ole Miss and Michigan State. So a lot of fans from up there bringing some coin downtown. And then we already talked about Arkansas and Calipari, Texas Tech, Maryland. The Maryland coach. Did we ever find that audio, by the way, Oren? Because in a nutshell, they're asking the players. You know, you always have like triple star players on the dais at the NCAA. And they asked the Maryland coach, you know, and they're talking to the players, like, why do you love this coach so much? Because he's gotten into it, if you've not been following that storyline, with his athletic director. And it looks like he's going to have a shot at some other jobs. And he wants to basically Maryland to put more money. Kevin Willard is the coach into the program. So they're on the dais and they ask one of the players, they go, what, you know, what do you guys love playing for Kevin Willard? And the guy goes, because he gets us paid.
Well, in 2025.
Right. Is it what you got, Oren? Take a listen.
Willard's someone who basketball players listen to. And what has he meant to you guys in the short time he's been with you?
First, he do pay us the money, and then so we got to listen to him.
So if ever there was a soundbite for people who feel, nah, this college basketball is ruined and the college athletics is completely off the rails, there it is. And who was the name? Oren, I'm sorry, what's the name of the player that dropped that one? Because that's gold.
Derek Queen. There was a moment during the Tennessee game where they were talking about the Tennessee head coach and now he was making like $100 bets with one of the point guards if he would like hit shots or do things like that. And it was like, yeah, this is the NIL age where if you're a coach now, you can just make bets with players like that and it's all good.
Yeah, if you're pearl clutching at this stage in the game, you are way late, my friend. This is just
wait,
how it is.
Wait, you're telling me you can make bets with your own players? Rick Neuheisel got fired from Washington for having a March Madness bracket.
Yeah, Barnes was Zakai Ziegler. He was talking about how he made him like multiple bets with Zakai Ziegler if Zakai did something.
Right. I mean, it just, like I said, Chris said it perfectly. Yeah, forget about crying about it. This is where we're at. And it's funny because ESPN, as they always like to do, get into these very mind-numbing arguments that are always in absolutes and it's in some, you know, net sum argument. And I guess, what was it, Stephen A. was asked, is the lack of mid-majors now in the tournament, is that killing March Madness? And Stephen goes, quite frankly, I believe it. No. The casual fan doesn't give a crap about McNeese. I know it's cool that you had a hype man who's got a sponsorship for NIL, but, I mean, let's be honest. You think you're going to do better numbers with George Mason or Kentucky?
Right.
I mean, it's Butler or, oh, I don't know, Duke. If it's all chalk, and for youngsters who don't know, that means basically all the favorites advance. If it's all chalk, that's the more casual fans will tune in for more name brands.
Yeah, 100%, Mike. And then also,
doesn't kill the tournament.
How about this aspect of it, too? As I tap the microphone, better basketball because you're getting more competitive games between these teams. I get some of these teams have made it to Elite Eights and Sweet 16s and even Final Fours, maybe a championship game once or twice. Right. But on average, Mike, they don't play well.
Yeah, you'll still have one shiny moment and you'll still have the McNeese highlights, right? The ball is tipped. and then here we go. I don't vibe that. I thought it was a silly argument. I think that, you know, your viewing habits have changed. Nothing but the NFL has got better numbers. The NFL is the only thing which has got basically got a stratospheric rise, you know, just endless rocket ship going up. Everything else has taken a hit. Baseball took a hit. They got a nice bounce with the Yankees and Dodgers. Again, name brands. So the same translates to college basketball.
Yeah, 1,000%. And Mike, you want to see it too. That's the dirty little secret nobody wants to admit. Right. You don't want to see this stuff too. Sister Jean was cute.
Right,
Amir
nice story.
Khan, cute. It's all fine and well. At the end of the day, when you settle down to watch the Final Four, you want to see the best basketball possible, and that means Duke. That means North Carolina on an average year. Auburn, right. Michigan, the teams that are always in it.
I guess if you're looking for a plucky underdog, go with BYU. Sorry for Bama fans. Why do you hate Bama so much? Because, right, aren't those guys like 25? They're already going on their missions and everything. else. Not to paint with a broad brush.
They're what, a sixth seed, I think they are, something like that. So
yep, they knocked out Wisconsin.
One of the highest scoring teams in the country, though, BYU. So, like, right. They put up points.
Right on. And I thought, if you watch that, the St. John's, Arkansas game, that was exciting. That was compelling because of the two coaches. They're not really, best buddies or anything, other than having names and ending vowels. There was really not much to it from the media standpoint, trying to make this into like a rivalry. They don't get along. Calipari's had a better record. Certainly, Kentucky's beat Louisville more than not when he was coach.
I was not going to lie, Mike. I was pretty shocked at the end of that game. I really was.
I just kept waiting for St. John's to get on a heater, and it just never happened.
They just didn't.
Right, and certainly the big front court of Arkansas, the Calipari's put together, those guys, I mean, St. John's had never played a team like with that size in the Big East or any of the opponents out of conference this year.
And now you look at it, how far can they go?
Right. Is Ole Miss like an underdog now? I mean, sorry for Sparty fans. We joked around with our man Deshaun Tate earlier. Now, we talked about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers living in the past. When's Michigan State going to advance? Izzo, go win another championship.
What, 2000 that they won?
Mateen Cleaves.
Yeah.
The Flintstones.
Yeah. Remember that? It's one of those few moments. I was there when UConn won. They had Trajan Langdon bringing the ball up. Remember, turned it over in Tampa.
Year before, yeah.
Michigan State was in that Final Four, but that was Calhoun's first win with UConn.
25 years ago.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy to think about. He's a legend and an icon and a first ballot Hall of Famer as a coach, but that is a long time in between championships.
Do you feel any differently about Georgia's humiliating loss to Gonzaga when Gonzaga is pretty much throttled by Houston in the next round?
No, it was still pretty awful, Mike, to watch it in the moment.
Just if anything, you got beat by a team that got turned around and got whipped. And if you had been able to handle your business, and then we talked with Connor Riley, what are we going to hear at
6:20?
Yeah,
we'll hear him at 6:20.
Because what happens now, I've asked the question, and is Abe working tonight? Abe's looking at me behind the glass. I presume he's here. Abe's always watching, listening, judging. But Abe's on tonight, and I wonder if he has the same feeling that I do when you and I have talked about. Does anybody give a flip about men's basketball at Georgia? I mean, yeah, I know that the student body can fill up Stegman, but you and I were talking about it on Friday. Do people really care, or is it sort of the tail of wagging the dog or with the chicken and the egg, whatever euphemism, metaphor?
Right.
If they get consistently good, will you then care?
Right. Yeah, I think that's it, Mike. I think you just hit nail on the head with that one.
Because it just, to me, that was, of all the teams, Texas fired their coach. They just hired Xavier's head coach, right?
Yeah, Sean Miller, the sweatiest man in college basketball. man sweats through a shirt like no one else I've ever seen.
He's taking the gig, so he's going to Texas. We mentioned Maryland. Their coach may or may not stay, depending on if he gets a better offer. But yeah, I mean, Georgia, the thing is, you got to the tournament, but you got humiliated. And the coach is coming back. But, I mean, unless Dominique's kid is like the best thing since sliced bread, he's a good college player, but it's not like you got Ant-Man coming in for a year.
No, and that was, you'll hear from Connor Riley on that as well. Maybe don't slow it down a little bit on Dominique's child.
That's what Georgia fans are telling us on Friday. Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell. Chris in for Carl. This hour of the show is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, where B-dubs is football, or as I said, this time of year, some round ball as well. Coming up. Say goodbye to Mr. Anderson. Guy was a big part of had some big moments, certainly not a big part in the World Series run. But unfortunately, there was nowhere else to go. You get more moves made. What's the guy we got from the Angels? What's it all about? Grant McCauley talks Braves with us next. It's our weekly visit a couple of times this week with Grant McCauley about what the Braves are doing as we're getting closer and closer to opening day. And Grant, I know that he looked so good a few weeks ago and then the walks just did him in. And we tried to explain, you can do a better job of explaining that just no more options for the Braves. It was basically Ian Anderson was pretty much done here if they couldn't get him to get it dialed in, and they just couldn't.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of the numbers game at this time of year is part of it. And then, as you mentioned, I mean, you only have a certain amount of options, which, for folks who follow baseball very closely, that you can only send a player to the minor leagues for, I believe it's a total of 3 years. You have three options on a player. One option, you can take them up and down as many times as you want to during that year, but at the end of that year, that option has been completely spent. So they had no more ability to send him to the minor leagues, and that meant that if he couldn't make the team, he was going to be designated for assignment anyway. And it seemed like the Braves, based on the number of walks, the sheer number there, and the fact that he just really wasn't able to get it dialed in, as you mentioned, just made it impossible to see a place where he was going to serve this rotation or maybe even this pitching staff at that. And so trading him to the Angels, maybe you didn't get that much for him. You kind of take a look at Jose Suarez, see what he is, but I think a lot of this is going to be just built on getting your bullpen ready to have Craig Kimbrell join it at some point. That's kind of the bigger picture thing here. But for Ian Anderson, I think it was just kind of running into being a victim of the numbers game and the fact that, unfortunately, over the last couple of years, you know, being in the minor leagues, that did cost him the ability and the injury, clearly, to put him off track to be a viable option for this club moving forward. It really is a shame because he had some really great moments in a Braves uniform, one right. that I don't think people are going to forget anytime soon.
Just how much importance does that put on one young A.J. Smith-Shawver as Grant, especially this is something that you and I have talked about before, if the Braves are going to need some extra days of rest for Lopez and Sale?
Yeah, I mean, you'll need him, but you'll also need Grant Holmes to step up. And, you know, you can hear from Grant Holmes tonight on my From the Diamond Spring Training Special, the second one. It airs at 10 p.m. You know, I was able to catch up with him. I was able to see A.J. Smith-Shawver while I was down there. You knew these guys were going to be factors, along with getting a longer look at Ian Anderson to see what he could offer for you. But these are guys that have performed over the course of the spring as well. And, you know, Smith-Shawver, he was really ahead of schedule when he arrived as a 20-year-old, you know, a couple of years ago. But he has seen postseason action twice now already. I mean, they weren't shy about at least giving him a chance to start in the wild card series against San Diego last year. So, you know, the belief is there. But the last couple of years, the work that he has done to really, I think, diversify his arsenal and work on his secondary pitches to go along with a mid-90s fastball, that's kind of the prototype of what you're looking for out of a starting pitching prospect. A.J. Smith-Shawver is certainly that, and we'll see what he's able to do with this chance. And as you mentioned, and as we'll talk about a lot, I'm sure, over the course of the season, it benefited Chris Sale. It benefited Ronaldo Lopez. Keep in mind Spencer Strider coming back from major elbow surgery. It could benefit him to be able to give him that extra day of rest throughout the course of the season and have all those guys gassed up and ready to go for October at their optimum level. That, I think, is part of that math as well.
It's our man Grant McCauley, whose segment is a basic cash cow for the organization. Brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service, and by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com and get a guaranteed offer on your home today. So I know that they have their logic and their reasoning for this timeline with Strider, but of course he's looked so good. And a lot of folks would say, well, why don't you just let him come up with the big club and pitch four or five innings and cap it and that's it. But he's going to do the rehab starts in Gwinnett.
Yeah, and I just don't know that he's quite there for the four to five innings even now. If he had, you know, four starts in spring training, I think that temptation would be a lot more palpable. But the fact that he had that first one, it went very well. He had the second one. And look, I think if he'd had the benefit of something he will have this year, which is the automated ball strike review, maybe he doesn't give up a two-run homer that kind of, you know, took the shine maybe a little bit off of that start. But honestly, not much took the shine off of the stuff. The competitive nature of Spencer Strider, you could tell, was there. And hearing him talk to the guys on the television broadcast as well, you could just tell that he's checked a lot of boxes this spring, but this is all about, you know, being methodical and building up and truly being ready. You never want to put a guy out there, and what I would say is, you know, not a position to succeed, and I'm just not, you know, convinced that not being able to go through a lineup two full times would be putting Spencer Strider out there in a way that he would be able to give the club his best and that the club would be able to get what they need out of a starting pitcher of his ilk.
All right, Grant, let's paint a little scenario here. We flash forward to Thursday around 6:45 p.m. Eastern. Braves are up 4-3 on the Padres going into the bottom of the ninth. Or excuse me, going into the bottom of the seventh. Who do you give the ball to in the seventh and the eighth inning after Sale goes six strong, but he's tapped out at 105 pitches?
I would imagine, just depending on how the lineup was constructed, you'd probably go Pierce Johnson or Dylan Lee there. It's going to be one of the two, just seeing where you are maybe in that lineup. Dylan Lee is a completely different type of lefty than Chris Sale is. I mean, most pitchers in baseball are different than Chris Sale, both in his stature and what he's able to do. But those are your high-leverage guys to me. Raisel Iglesias, we know he's got the ninth, but those are the two I think they're going to lean on quite a bit here in the early going and really over the course of the season, though there could be some contenders like a Daisbell Hernandez, for example, that could also really impress this club and maybe push himself into some of those leverage spots. And then, you know, we'll talk about the Craig Kimbrell of it all when Craig Kimbrell is a factor in the big league bullpen.
You know, Grant, I understand, like, Alex Anthopoulos has done some amazing things. He's won us a World Series, and he's put together a great roster. But, you know, the Chavez thing's almost comical at this point. I know they love him, but what can we expect from Jesse when he does get up with a big club?
If he is going to be a part of the big league club and the big league bullpen, it's going to be very similar to I think the role that he's had in the past, though he has pitched his way into some bigger spots, I think at this point you're looking for somebody that if the starter gets knocked out in the third or fourth inning, or you need an inning and two-thirds to bridge you to the sixth to kind of piece a game together, as the saying goes, that's where I feel like Jesse Chavez can help the club the most. For whatever reason, I mean, this is a guy that has just pitched his best in his career. You can look at the numbers in an Atlanta Braves uniform. And it is, at this point, it's comical. As soon as he got released by the Texas Rangers, I posted, you know, he's been released. The Atlanta Braves are on the clock because you just, it's a fait accompli. If Jesse Chavez is a free agent, the Braves are going to have some conversation with him. He's going to have a conversation maybe to get it started, which is kind of what it sounded like this time, just to see if, hey, there's anything available. But he brings, I think, a lot of intangibles, along with what has been pretty tangibly a good member of that bullpen, but not the highest of expectations. Father Time is undefeated, as they say, so I don't think they're going to be building the bullpen around him, if you know what I mean.
Do you think the starter-backup split with Drake Baldwin and Chadwick Trump is going to be the same as if it was Murphy and Trump?
Probably so. I think you'd look at, because of the fact that he's a left-handed hitter, he being Baldwin, that would make him the strong side of the platoon. So you're going to see way more righty starters than lefties. And I think Chadwick Trump really kind of is, you know, at home in the role. If you ask him to be the backup guy, that's good. If you need a little bit more out of him, I think he's there for it. But I think you've got to kind of find out, you know, what Drake Baldwin can offer you as well. And he's been a tantalizing prospect that we've seen have some really good results this spring. So yeah, there may not be a huge amount of time for him to get comfortable back there before Sean Murphy is back in that picture. But I think the Braves would really like to find out what they have there and see what Drake Baldwin can do.
Okay, man, time for the first of many times, Grant, when I will be like, wait a minute, something's not right here. The alarming overreaction, and it's not even, what, the opening day. But it is March 24th. Okay, RC is batting 135. Matt Olson is batting 191. What's going on there?
Well, Matt Olson did homer today, though. So if we're going to be a prisoner of the moment, then maybe he's on pace for a better season than we thought. But no, I feel like as long as they're getting their work in and they're able to just get to the season healthy, especially Matt Olson, I mean, these are two completely different situations here.
Right.
I think you're going to feel pretty good about what he's able to do for you. But, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, I had a lot of time to talk with him down in Northport while I was there at the start of spring training. And he said, you know, we canvassed the possibility of making a move at shortstop and didn't find something that really just knocked their socks off or jumped off the page. Right. And if everything else is going well, and I know we've talked about this, and I know it's not the most popular opinion, but if the other eight spots in the lineup are doing what they're supposed to be doing, you can live with Orlando Arcia batting ninth and playing a solid shortstop for you. But I will throw this caveat on there, as I continue to do. You've got to get more out of him than you did a year ago when he batted 218 in 157 games and was one of the worst statistical everyday players in baseball. That won't fly for a full entire second season. So whether or not they were able to do it in the winter, I still think that's an area that they look at that could be in need of an upgrade and could get an upgrade before the season is over.
And by the way, Grant's right. Braves are raking against the Cubs. It's early days, but it's 10 runs for the Braves. Ozuna hit a home run, Matt Olson as well, and Schwellenbach looked good.
Yeah, yep. It is Grant McCauley, our Braves insider, talking to him here. Dukes and Bell, Chris Thomas, Turtle, in on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Until Acuña's back every day in the fold, if Ozuna needs a day off, it doesn't look like there may be a natural option to fill in at DH. Who do you have slotting in there?
I don't really think he's going to get too many days off. I mean, the only reason he would, I would think, is if something's wrong, and I don't know that we even want to go down that rabbit hole yet.
No.
But, you know, it's kind of a, you either have Kelnick or De La Cruz, one or the other of them in the outfield, and probably the other one at the DH spot. I mean, you could use your catcher, your second catcher, but I'm not sure that the Braves love doing that. A lot of clubs like to just be a little bit more careful not to burn both of those guys and risk losing the DH and having to go, I would guess, old school National League style and deal with the pitcher spot anymore. But I don't think that they have a lot of layers of depth behind that, but Marcel's an everyday guy that's asked to go swing the bat four or five times, and he enjoys doing it. So hopefully he is the guy in that spot for as many times as can possibly be out there.
Hey, a couple of guys hit us up on the text line asking about the pitching staff. You know, Chris asked about A.J. Smith-Shawver. It's go time for him now. Is Bryce Elder, is this kind of his lot in life? Because he just, you know, I know the All-Star game. I was at, unfortunately, that game down there in Tampa right before the All-Star break where things started going south. He doesn't have the overpowering stuff. Is there no way to maximize his talent, or is this as good as it gets?
I think, you know, some guys, I mean, they have a certain amount of stuff that takes them a certain way on their journey, a certain distance, I guess, if you want to call it that, on their journey. And then you got to make adjustments. I mean, baseball is that game. And, you know, hitters are going to adjust to what was working for him. He's got to adjust to, you know, what can keep him one step ahead. And at times, he shows you those flashes of maybe being that guy. But by and large, he runs into a troublesome inning, and is just not really able to, you know, string together those consistent quality starts that he did for quite a while. It wasn't just 2023 either in that first half. I mean, right. He threw some big games late in 2022. So, you know, with him being optioned out, it's obviously not a surprise. It's just kind of, at this point, I think, organizational depth. And I know that can be a bit of a pejorative that people don't enjoy, but it just kind of is what it is. I mean, he's been passed over, I think, by A.J. Smith-Shawver, certainly. Grant Holmes kind of stepped into a great opportunity for himself, and that's another great story that I'll talk about again tonight on From the Diamond at 10 o'clock. But there's just some guys, I think it's just, you know, there's only so much they can do. And for Bryce Elder, unless or until he makes maybe some kind of a minor or major adjustment, right, to be a little bit more consistent, it's hard to count on him, and that, I think, has him where he is.
All right, Grant, we appreciate you, brother. Again, tonight, 10 o'clock right here on 92.9 The Game. Don't forget the Odyssey app as well, so if you don't catch it, you can always rewind and get Grant's insight with the Braves. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, guys.
That's our man, guys. And as you know, before you know it, it will be the home opener. They start on the West Coast, but we'll be at Murph's, man, with our buddy. Hopefully, Dale Murphy will be swinging by as always. That'll be coming up on April 4th.
Yeah, we're going to him.
Right on, man. And get those cheese curds and have some fun. Hey, a couple of things real quick before we get to the daily download in the next hour. But you and I were just reading some stuff during the commercial break. Crazy story. Former UFC champion Cain Velasquez gets sentenced to jail. And what happened now? It was 5 years?
Yeah, it was an attempted murder charge. It looks like he's going to be facing 5 years. I remember him being one of the more dominant figures in mixed martial arts probably about a decade ago now.
Right.
And that's just shocking to see. And then you were telling me during the break that you were reading reports that the general consensus on Kane was that this would be the last thing anyone would ever expect him to do.
Yeah, our buddy Mark Raimondi, if you guys know, he's big into WWE, and he's big into mixed martial arts, and he follows UFC. He wrote about a half hour ago, he said he spent nearly a week with Cain Velasquez and his family down in Mexico City about 5 years ago to chronicle his debut down there, the Lucha Libre wrestling. And he says he got to know him pretty well, and he said you wouldn't find many people with bad things to say about him. His kid was, the guy that he was shooting at the car was alleged to have abused his son, and but he can't be shooting at a moving vehicle. Either way, he's going to be looking at 5 years in jail. I know for a lot of UFC guys, that was a big name.
Yeah, he was somebody that was recognizable as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport for a long period of time.
Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell, guys. We got more to dive into, including a really cool piece of video. I just reposted it, Mike Bell ATL, and it is part of the headlines. We'll tell you about it. Have you been watching the Tomorrow's Golf League, the indoor golf with the simulator?
Listen, you're about to be living in a championship city, my friend.
Yes, if Atlanta beats New York, Arthur Blank's got another championship to go along with Atlanta United. We'll explain. It's a pretty cool. It's a Falcon quarterbacks, past and present, hanging out with Arthur Blank down there in West Palm Beach. We'll tell you about that. Also, guys, in the 6 o'clock hour, Connor Riley on you know, what's going on with the Dogs in the draft. Why is Mike Hill-Williams there's a perception he's sliding. Mike White, you know, what's it going to be like next year for Georgia basketball? Are you going to build on that first round exit? And also, what about the number one quarterback in the country? Is he dissing the Dogs? You'll get all that coming up next on Dukes and Bell.